just to prove that he was a cool uncle and wasn't letting me do anything, he actually won the World Series 4-3. And this was like an amazing moment in my life that I've remembered ever since. It was like the day that I was treated like the adult I was at 7 years old.
That was station manager Mitch Tyke live on stage at one of our Howl Story Slams, telling a story about a day he spent with his favorite uncle at age 6. And we're doing something a little bit different on the Howl podcast today. We will be playing that entire story from Mitch later on in the show. But first, I wanted to bring on Mitch and talk a little bit about storytelling and some of our favorite storytellers. Hey, Mitch.
Hey there, Ethan.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Hey, it is a pleasure to walk down the hall to have a conversation with you.
I know, and it is a pleasure for me to be able to talk with you. I don't often get to see you. You know, we have to make appointments to see you sometimes 3 to 4 months in advance. It's tough, but I appreciate that you're here.
Anyway. I think back to the line about Zaphod Beeblebrox from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I'm sorry, he's too cool to speak with you right now.
That's awesome. For those of you who have not been out to one of our Howl live events, Mitch is the host for those and often is introducing each event with a story of his own. I've heard quite a few of them. Mitch is a great storyteller on stage and on the air. And the story that we're going to be hearing from him later is one that I was really surprised to hear. I don't want to give anything away right now, so I won't. So right now, what I wanted to do is just talk about, like, I guess the thing that inspired you to be a storyteller, because you've been in radio for, 75 years now? So you've told a lot of stories on the air, and you've interviewed quite a few amazing storytellers yourself. And I guess, what is it about storytelling that drew you to this profession?
You know, I think the best part about storytelling as it's done on the radio is it is very much unlike what you get. You can't cheat. You can't go to the end. You can't, like, you know, you could record it and fast forward things, but you wouldn't do that because that wouldn't make sense.
Right. It forces you to pay attention.
Your eye
can't skip around the page because there is no page. Right.
And the storyteller has all the power to do things creatively. It's a power trip. I think the best stories as told on the radio reveal a little more and a little more and a little more. And there's no sort of jumping back and forth in time if you want people to be able to follow what you're doing. So you have to be really creative with how you tell the story, and you know you leave some breadcrumbs as you go.
Right, you kind of have to be deliberate about your foreshadowing.
Yeah, and I think just about everything I've done in this business. I mean, you know, I started as a news reporter and a news director at a little tiny station in a town not too much different than a town you'd find in the North Country, except with more Iowans in it, and kind of taught myself storytelling for the radio. It was great. It was a place that we were a little independent commercial radio station, and there were no real rules. And I taught myself a little bit about storytelling, and storytelling made itself evident to me over the years. And sort of everything I've done since then has had some kind of storytelling involved in it, whether it's an interview or it's going out and talking with a donor or talking to listeners and explaining, you know, why we do what we do. You know, I love a good story.
Yeah, yeah. I also started in commercial radio. Well, I guess I really first started at a college radio station where there were very few rules aside from don't swear on the air and don't play any music with swearing until after like 10 o'clock or whatever. So my foray into storytelling was really crafted around like country music. And I'm not a fan of country music, but in a way I had to kind of create this character of me who is a fan of country music, which was a challenge and not something I ever anticipated being like a career or certainly part of my life. But it helped inform the way that I tell stories in writing and in this podcast. And the cool thing about being on commercial radio, where there are very few rules and there's a lot of freeform stuff, is that you can try out these really bizarre left of center sort of avant-garde ideas. And because I invited you in here to talk about storytelling, I've been thinking about the people who got me involved in storytelling. And the first prominent storyteller in my life was my dad. And when I was a kid, I used to love sitting at the kitchen table when my parents had friends and relatives over and just listening to my dad tell these like off the wall stories that no doubt he embellished. You know, it gave me like this insight into my dad's life. Hearing his stories helped me understand that he was like a full person. He was a character. And so that that storytelling that I learned from my dad did make its way onto the radio when I was a country DJ. My dad asked me one day, when are you going to have me into the station and tell stories? And I was like, well, we can do it anytime you want. He's like, yeah, let's do that. We'll call it A Minute with the Old Man. And so I said, okay, sure, I'll try it. And I didn't anticipate that it would become popular, and I didn't think that he would want to do it all of the time. But it became this daily segment that we did in the midday hours on this little tiny commercial country radio station. I'd call him every day. We'd talk for like 10 or 15 minutes. He would tell me something about his day or something about his childhood or just make something up completely off the top of his head. There were some times when he didn't really have anything good, and we would just kind of like BS our way through it. But there would be other times where I heard a story about his life that he had never told anyone before. And I was like, you realize that this is going out to like thousands and thousands of people, right? And
or at least dozens.
Well, there are at least dozens of people. But he was just like a natural storyteller, like from, for as long as I could remember, always like spinning a yarn and really, you know, he wasn't a public person by any means, but really understood the power that he had by telling a story and capturing someone's attention. He wasn't like, a man with a huge vocabulary. He was well-read, but the kind of stories that he told were like very like down-home country, kind of like small-town living stories. And those are the kind of stories that I love to read, and those are the ones that I love to hear. You know, like, it's the reason I love reading stuff by Stephen King. They're about just like everyday kind of average people. You know, it got me thinking, like, who is the storyteller that kind of like paved the way, set the stage, set the tone for the stories that you like to hear? Do you have one?
Well, you know, I don't know that he paved the way for me, because I sort of learned about him midstream. But as far as storytelling goes, as far as the people in my head that I to mix a metaphor, look up to.
Yeah.
When I'm thinking of crafting my own story, I come back to the late Stuart McLean, who was the host of the Vinyl Cafe on the CBC, and we carried it here for many years. In addition to having things like musical guests, you feel free to roll your eyes. I did have the honor of getting to interview him once, and he really, you know, there were people that thought of his show as the Canadian Prairie Home Companion, and I in some ways, you know, there are similarities in terms of format, but the stories that Stuart McLean told about this fictional world that he created around a small town record store, and the people who inhabited it, mostly Dave, the owner, and his wife, Morley. First of all, that he came up with such brilliant stories week after week after week after week, and that he was able to do them in a way that you knew they weren't off the cuff, but they were delivered in such a way that there was room for them to evolve in the listener's mind and in his telling of them. That there, you know, he has a number of books that are collections of these stories, and in some ways they don't do justice because they can never evolve.
Yeah.
And sort of seeing them in print makes them a little different than hearing them on the radio. But at the same time, I mean, they're masterful stories, and they really taught me and still teach me a lot about pacing and timing and, you know, being willing to go with something and cut something else short. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it never fails to make me feel good about life when I listen to it.
as I said before, you're the MC for our live Story Slam events around the North Country, and you always introduce and kind of give people an idea of how they should tell a story by telling your story first, because you're a professional and you've been doing it for many, many years. So yeah, you got on stage and you told the story about your uncle.
So this story had been kind of percolating in my head for a long time.
Yeah, this and, was the first time that you told this story, right?
It was definitely the first time I told the story in front of an audience.
Yeah.
I feel like I might have mentioned it to my wife or something at some point. But I had always had this really fond memory of a day on Cape Cod with my uncle, who was in his 20s at the time. I was like 6 years old at the time. I feel bad. You'll hear in the end, you know, this is not the story by which his legacy should be judged. And the story that it should probably should be judged is when he introduced me to my first ham and cheese sandwich.
Oh, my.
And that that was really the life changer in my life. But this was a story that I think there's not an unreliable narrator component to it. It's just, you know, the twist at the end. I think came as a twist to everyone listening to it. And I don't feel like I have a lot of those kinds of stories out there. It is definitely a product of its place and time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right. So without any further ado, here is Mitch live on stage at one of our Howl Story Slams.
So I'm going to tell you actually a story that goes back to, gosh, when I was about 6 years old. And imagine me with more hair and less hair on my face as far as I can remember. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and but we would go to sometimes to Cape Cod, sometimes to Maine for a week in the summer, back in the days when I believe that my parents loved each other, and the days where things were, that was dark, wasn't it? Things were kind of rosy back in those days. I was six or seven, and we had fun in the summer, and the best part of going on these trips on summer vacation, to me, was getting to hang out with my Uncle Mark. And Mark was like the cool uncle. He seemed like the uncle that was only a couple of years older than me, even though he was in his mid-20s at that point. And this was a couple of years after he introduced me to something that changed my life. We were spending the day. He lived in Somerville, Massachusetts, and he took me around when I was like five or six, and we spent a Saturday driving around Boston and going and playing pinball and this kind of stuff that my parents never wanted to do with me because I'm sure it drove them crazy. But he was young and cool and had a funky beard, and we stopped at a convenience store, and he bought, and I should preface this by saying I grew up Jewish. With an emphasis on the ish. But we stopped at a convenience store, and he brought a couple of sandwiches in the car, which turned out to be something called ham and cheese. I had never had ham or had any kind of meat with cheese at the same time. And this was not gourmet ham and cheese. This was white bread with ham and American cheese and mayonnaise. And my God, it changed my life. So Uncle Mark was cool. And so he was spending this week on Cape Cod with us. We were all in this A-frame cottage. And one day, my parents and I guess my uncle wasn't married yet, but it was his girlfriend. They were going to go out on a hike for a few hours, like the afternoon. And my uncle was going to hang out with me in this A-frame, and we were going to play Superstar Baseball. Now, Superstar Baseball, you might remember there are a variety of different kind of statistical baseball games that you could play. This was a board game. It had a spinner on it, but it was all based on statistics. And, you know, you drew your lineup based on the people that were, you know, all-stars from all time. So, you know, Honus Wagner and Ty Cobb and Roberto Clemente and Willie Mays, they could all be on your team. And we played a World Series against each other. And this was like the time of my life because all I ever really wanted to do was play baseball and baseball board games. So the fact that my Uncle Mark was going to spend the entire afternoon with me playing this was incredible. And we had the most amazing time. My team was, for some reason, I believe he chose the name. My team was called the Mutza Balls. And his team was called, you folks who have some experience from the 70s might recognize this, the Marrakesh Express. Which should have tipped me off to, that something was going on. But we spent the whole afternoon playing, and the World Series went to 7 games just to prove that he was a cool uncle and wasn't letting me do anything. He actually won the World Series 4-3. And this was like an amazing moment in my life that I've remembered ever since. It was like the day that I was treated like the adult I was at 7 years old. I got to hang out for the entire afternoon with my Uncle Mark playing superstar baseball. And so it was about 7 or 8 years ago, we were actually in Maine this time and hanging out with my Uncle Mark, who's a little older, and so am I. And I mentioned what a remarkable time this was for me, just like how much it meant to me that when I was 7, he spent the entire afternoon playing superstar baseball with me. And he looked at me and he scratched his head, which has also a lot less hair on it than it did in those days. And he said, "Oh, I think that was the weekend that we were experimenting with mescaline." And I looked at him, and I said, "What?" And he said, "Well, how else would I have spent an entire afternoon playing superstar baseball with a 7-year-old? But I still thought it was pretty cool, and I fell for the idea. Anyway, there's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That was station manager Mitch Tyke live on stage at one of our Howl Story Slams. I have listened to that story a bunch of times in the course of putting together this podcast, and I really, really enjoy it. Obviously, I wouldn't be playing it if I didn't like it.
You like the part about the goat?
Stop. But my the thing that I like about that story the most is that, you know, you prefaced it by saying that it's a product of its time, for sure, but you are telling this story now as an adult, and it's, you know, it's through your lens as like a 6-year-old, but simultaneously it's through your lens as an adult. And I think we don't have a whole lot of stories like that. You know, you're having to reconcile what you thought of as this amazing day that you've reflected on many, many a time as this this wonderful day you got to spend with one of your favorite uncles, a favorite figure in your life. And now as an adult, you have to go, they experienced that differently, right? Your uncle certainly experienced that story differently. Yeah.
Well, and I think the other thing is, you know, you think about your life as a 6-year-old, there are really not that many days from when you were 6 that you remember with any kind of narrative arc whatsoever. Yeah. I mean, you might have like a fleeting image, but this day was like burned into my brain. As you say, it didn't happen the way a 6-year-old necessarily thought of it. And at the same time, like, no one can take away from the idea that as a 6-year-old, I had the time of my life that day.
Right. And the revelation that your uncle was experimenting with mescaline doesn't tarnish that event. It makes it way funnier in retrospect. Me and my family still engage in the ritual of storytelling, especially when we get together at like a campsite or a campfire. And sometimes one of us will be telling a story and a brother will perk up and say, "What are you talking about? That's not what happened." And then you spend the next, you know, couple of hours lying in bed, just sort of like staring up at the ceiling, thinking about your entire life. And is the rest of my memory, you know, false?
It's like finding out that episode of the Andy Griffith Show actually took place because Aunt B was totally stoned.
Is that a real episode?
No, it's not a real episode. She was drunk in one episode.
Oh, you have an encyclopedic knowledge of the Andy Griffith Show, don't
you? Just the black and whites.
All right. So Mitch is also the host of the Northwoods podcast from NCPR. If you've not listened and subscribed to the Northwoods podcast, you absolutely should do that. And I'm not only saying that because I help edit and produce the program, but also because it is very good. Mitch, can you tell us a little bit about Northwoods?
This particular episode of Northwoods that I haven't recorded yet because I don't have an interview guest yet?
It's just, no, the show in general. What do you mean? What is the show about?
It's about 25 minutes long. Sorry, I'll stop that. You can edit that part out. yeah, Northwoods actually celebrates storytelling in its own way. And I think the best part about it is finding normal people who don't necessarily think of themselves as storytellers.
For sure.
And having them share a little bit about their life in one particular area. I mean, actually, the perfect examples of it is the kind of cross-pollination that happened when I interviewed Carrie Woodcock, who won our Howl Story Slam in Morristown, went on to the Grand Slam, in fact. But she told this really moving story about what her life was like when she worked as a substitute music teacher during the pandemic.
Yep.
And it was a story that I thought really could be expanded into a broader interview form. And, you know, she had never told the story as she did out loud before she went to the Howl and then came into the very same studio where you and I are sitting right now and shared it in 20 or 25 minutes. And we let it breathe a little bit. And it turned into a really unique segment that I think is a perfect example of what I try to do with Northwoods, which is, you know, find a story that somebody, maybe they told, you know, in a paragraph on social media, or maybe somebody forwarded me an email and you could look at it and say, there's more to this. And if we could have a conversation about it, it will be its own story, even if the person didn't think of it as a story in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. Carrie's story is all about how she became a substitute music teacher during the pandemic. And one of the projects that the class took on was to write and record an original piece of music. And it's over 200 students who participate in this project who lend their voice and their unique talent to creating this song. And hearing Carrie tell this story was really incredible. And that's sort of the impetus for the show, is that the North Country is full of these hidden treasures, not just artifacts, but people, these hidden storytellers who, as you said, do not think of themselves as storytellers, but who have these wonderful tales to tell. And they paint this really rich and vibrant picture of the North Country as a lovely place to live, full of amazing experiences.
And, you know, and I hope they're the kind of stories that you hear and you share with people around you, you know, and start looking for those kinds of stories, even if you don't suggest them to be on Northwoods, just kind of celebrate the stories that we all have.
Yeah, just awesome conversations on Northwoods. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. You should subscribe to it and hear new episodes weekly.
You should make your relatives subscribe to it, too.
You should also make your relatives subscribe to it. And coming soon, a spinoff of Northwoods, it's the Simpsons podcast, where me and Mitch try to remember Simpsons episodes off the top of our heads and then watch them and see how wrong we were.
Plus a Canadian version of the game show Jeopardy called Jeopardy.
Okay, that's all the time we have. All right, thanks, Mitch.
Thanks, Ethan.
That's it for this week's episode of the Howl Podcast. Coming up next week,
right after that, his spirit shot out of his chest and swirled around the room and was just bouncing off the walls and was free. And the next thing I know, part of it went down the crown of my head and into my body, and the rest just flew out the window.
Make sure you follow the show so you don't miss that episode or any of our upcoming shows this season. The Howl is written, produced, and edited by me, Ethan Shanty, with editorial supervision provided by David Summerstein. Doyle Dean is our production manager, Bill Hanel is our digital services director, and Caitlin Kelly is our social media manager. Our theme music is by Famous Letter Writer of Plattsburgh. For more stories and to find out when we're going to be telling stories on stage in your town, visit ncpr.org/howl. And while you're there, you can make a donation to support this show. A donation in any amount helps our programming, helps our staff, helps keep the lights on at NCPR, and we thank you for your support. For NCPR, I'm Ethan Shanty. This is North Country Public Radio.